Hello, good morning. My name's Dov, and I'm here to share recovery with Hashem's help with you guys and gals, whoever's listening, and hoping that the connection's good, of course, and that our hearts are open and we're honest. I like to talk about guard your eyes, and I like to talk about recovery, and how guard your eyes in particular can help people get into recovery. And it's very interesting to me how guard your eyes, even though there are so many things that are kind of missing in guard your eyes as a recovery tool, it's so interesting how effective guard your eyes is and has been for the past bunch of years now, as a tool to bring people who need recovery into recovery. It's also been a very powerful tool to that's Hashem, through guard your eyes, has helped many hundreds of people who need recovery to get into recovery, and who don't need recovery because they're not addicts, and people who are not addicts do not need what I'm referring to as recovery. But these non-addicts, guard your eyes has been the vehicle through which Hashem has helped many non-addicts find the help that they need, whether it be good counseling, therapy, tools and gimmicks like Topsic, which is a gimmick. It's a helpful gimmick, but it doesn't solve any problems. It's just a gimmick, which is what a gimmick is. A gimmick is something that doesn't really solve anybody's problem. It just helps them accomplish a specific goal, at least in the short term. And Topsic certainly only helps in the short term at best. And so does the Wall of Honor, and so does the quote-unquote accountability that people have with nameless people calling themselves Tshuva 613, Gingerbread Man, etc. These tools are so powerful and so effective for so many people in the short term and sometimes in the long term. I just find it so interesting, because how is it that gimmicks, things that don't really have the answer, that don't really change anything significant, that don't really solve any problems, how are they so effective? How are they so effective? And the answer is two parts. One, they're not so effective. Let's not be fooled. There are a tremendous amount of people who are saying that they're helped so much by guard your eyes, but many of them, as you know, if you are one of them, have achieved, 3 days clean, 2 weeks clean. You've never achieved that before. So that's a tremendous deal. It's a tremendous thing. However, what's going to happen in the long term? Is your life going to get any better? Yes, there'll be less sperm spilled on the ground, but has your life changed? If you're a woman who's masturbating, using pornography, etc., are you gonna become a woman who doesn't do that now? Are you a person who is honest with, instead of having a double life now? What's changed exactly? How long are you gonna stay clean? Is this all a matter of how long you stay clean? 3 months, 6 months, now I only do it every 6 months. The question, though, is we know that when a person who has a real problem starts to hold back and keeps holding back successfully, what happens, even if the reason is toxic or wall of honor or some, as long as it's an external thing that's holding them back and doesn't actually change anything within them, what happens is, as soon as they break free of this thing that's holding them to their clean time, you know, as soon as they break free from that, as soon as the term is over, the jail term is over, no matter how much they're enjoying being free, what's going to happen is there's a reaction. They're going to have a reaction of bouncing back. It's a rebound effect. There's going to be a, the person's going to naturally go even stronger in the opposite direction. So a short-term solution usually causes long-term loss. And that's a big problem. That's a big challenge. That people who are using gimmicks and not getting actual help, you know, always end up in, you know, having to endure. There is a tremendous advantage for a person who's accustomed to pornography to living without their pornography for 30 days, 90 days, etc. And you'll see studies that show that pornography has effects on the brain and on the body. Exposure to pornography, they call it. I mean, you know, the person who's exposing themselves to pornography isn't being exposed to pornography. They love it. As much as you think you hate it, if you're chasing after it and being moshe nefesh to hide and lie and suffer to find it, to get it, to see it, to check it out, and to you know, grab hold of it and use it. If you're doing that, that's not called being exposed to pornography. Just because someone else produced it, you're not a victim if you're doing that. You love it, you desire it, it's precious to you. Ad kidei kach, that you're willing to endanger your reputation to some degree, to lie to your spouse about where you are, to trick someone else and use their cell phone without their permission to get that sweet fix. It's sweet to you. That's why you're doing it. That's not being exposed to anything. That's choosing something. It's choosing at some significant, often significant personal cost of guilt and shame and pain and embarrassment and frustration, and you still go for it. Even though it makes you feel frustrated, that proves how precious it is to you. That's important to understand. If that's what's going on, you're not being exposed to pornography. You're finding pornography. You're finding it and using pornography. And there's studies that already show that it has an effect on the way a person's brain works and in a number of ways. And being unexposed to it, so to speak, you know, for the person to not have any access for a while definitely has a positive effect on a person. It definitely frees a person temporarily from some of those side effects that pornography has on the brain. And that's a tremendous bracha, really. That's a tremendous bracha. We owe a debt of gratitude to the Rabbanu Shalom for making our bodies so plastic that we have actual change happens over a short period of time. And we improve in certain ways over even a short period of time, like 90 days, which is a very short period of time, we actually undergo certain change. Is this a long-term solution of any kind? Does this bode well for the rest of your life, my life, a person's life? No, it really doesn't. What it does is it gives a person an opportunity to feel a little bit of what it's like not to have this stuff on their brain, except if number one, if you're an addict, it's not going to solve your problem. Number two, even if you're a non-addict, it's not going to solve your problem either, because when you are, you know, eventually it's probably going to get you. probably. Because Usually, things happen, things change, a person is hurt or feels like they're deserving things that they're not getting, and then they reach out for nechama, even if they're not addicts. You know, this is not an addict thing. Addicts will act out eventually, even if things are going great. You don't have to be restless or irritable or discontent to act out if you're an addict. Addicts will eventually act out no matter what the circumstances are. And that's important to understand. But if you're a non-addict, okay, if you're a person who, you just have a habit, you know, of using schmutz, it's the Yetzer Hara, whatever you want to call it. You're gonna benefit from being clean from it for a while, but who's keeping you clean from it? You are, right? You are. So when you decide that you want to, you're gonna go get it again. Nothing's changed. If a person puts themselves into a situation where they cannot get onto the computer, and has no internet access, so then have you cut off your access from your mind? Have you cut off access from your private parts? I don't think so. You know, I think that the person is going to probably end up using some other drug like masturbation instead of pornography pretty soon, or fantasy. Get more and more slowly into fantasy. They're going to excuse themselves. I've seen this happen plenty of times. They're going to excuse themselves and saying, well, I'm going to have better sex with my wife and focus the relationship on sex and sex and sex and more sex. And that's kosher. It's what Hashem wants. And they find svarim that say that in some way, shape, or form, whatever. And they end up basically sex crazed. It ends up boomeranging, or whatever the word is. It ends up rebounding on them so badly that a year or two later, they're in a complete wreck, even though they're not addicts, because they've chosen a path where their own sexual satisfaction is farshteitzach, I'm a man, or farshteitzach, I'm a woman, farshteitzach, where it's mutter, and we're supposed to, and blah, blah, blah. And all the farshteitzachs end up twisting the person into a pretzel and causing much more pain than they were having before when they were just being a little naughty. Often these solutions that we come up with are not solutions. Does this mean that a person should not join the Wall of Honor and stay clean for 90 days in order to clean their brain out from the bad effects of porn? Of course you should. Everybody should. No question. There's no question in my mind that exposure to this stuff is bad for everybody. I don't think it's healthy for people. You know, I don't think that it's healthy for a person to use fantasy, because fantasy usually takes a person out of reality. Motzi'in es ha'adam min ha'olam. It takes a person out of reality, out of the world. In other words, out of reality. It's not a good thing. It doesn't help in the long run. It hurts in the long run. So therefore, being clean from it should be of great value. In the long run, though, I'm trying to say that without making any real change in a person's perspective on life and habits in life, living habits, without making a change in habits of living and perspective, in other words, lifestyle changes, a person will not benefit after those 90 days are over. The benefit is going to be lost eventually, probably pretty soon. So how does a person make a long-term change? Well, a person makes a long-term change I mean, very often I've heard people say, well, the long-term change is I'm going to be mugdar min ha'arayas. I'm going to be vigilant. Vigilant. Very, very vigilant. And more tsanua, like the opposite of what I was before. Before I was promiscuous. Now I'm going to be tsanua. The problem is that here you have, the Gemara says, ein chavush matir atzmo, mibes ha'asurim. A person who is entrapped, a person who's trapped, cannot take himself out. In other words, he needs someone else to get him out. Something has to change. In other words, a crazy person cannot treat himself because he's using the same mind that got him so sick in the first place. It just doesn't work. It's based on arrogance, is what's going on. Arrogance tells a crazy person or a sick person, a person with a mind that has gotten them into trouble over and over and over and over again, and anybody who's like ever used the schmutz and masturbated themselves or whatever you do, and then gone, oh, I can't believe I did that again. I'm going to control it better next time. I'm going to do this next time and that next time. And then it happens again. And you realize, like, oh, my God, I have to. And you realize that you were tricked. Your mind played tricks on you. You were tricked by your own whatever it is, laziness. You'll call it laziness or whatever. It's just laziness is just avoidance. You were tricked by something. And the person's going to say, well, you know, I was tricked. But you know, but that was last time. This is this time, you know. and realize by now that the problem has been their mind, not their penis, not their body, not their. It's the desire is the problem. No, my mind is the problem. That's been the problem all along. It's your mind that's been tricking you, getting you into all this trouble. You and I have figured out how to quit, and we were wrong. It was a miscalculation. We were wrong. We thought we didn't want it, and really we did. We thought we wanted Torah and Mitzvahs better, and yet we chose this instead of them, and we were wrong. So our minds are where the problem is. And how are you going to use your mind that's screwy, that tricks you? How are you going to be so smart enough to figure it out and beat it? That's called arrogance. And it's typical in teenagers and younger people, as we all know. Arrogance is not it's not an evil arrogance. It's just kind of an oblivious arrogance. Like, well, who else is going to fix my problem? I remember for years and years going along swearing to myself, I'm going to beat this. I have to beat this. I have to control myself. I have to control it. I have to control it. And reading Sfarim about the Yetzer Hara, reading things in Reb Tzadok and the Yesod Yosef and lots and lots of Rabbi Nachman Torah. Lots of Rabbi Nachman Torah. Lots of, and Rabbi Nachman's not talking about addicts in any of his stuff, you know, practically, you know. But you know, it's like, What's going on? These people who lived in 1500, 1600, 1700, they didn't know about this stuff. They weren't talking about this stuff. So I remember searching and searching, thinking I'm going to finally figure it out. I'm going to figure out a way to beat the Yetzer Hara, to beat myself, to trick myself and fix myself so I won't be fooled next time. I'm not going to be fooled again, you know. Who and then I was, you know, there it goes again, whoops, you know, oh boy, what happened? So this is because a sick mind won't be able to fix itself, and yet who tries to fix themselves? When you have a person with a sick mind, what do? They always try to fix themselves. The sicker the mind, the more that mind is trying to fix itself. You know? That's the way that we work.
You know, that's the way that we always work. That's why the Gemara has to say, Ein Chavash Mater Atzmon in Beit HaAsurim, because that's what happens. The sick mind is always the one that wants to fix itself, and only itself. And it doesn't want to reach for anybody. It can't bear to reach for anybody. It can't bear to, you know. What do you see with the craziest criminals? They always represent themselves in court, you know. They always retain, instead of retaining an attorney from the state, you know, what do they call it, a people's defender or whatever it is, you know, instead of retaining an attorney that they offer you by the Constitution, you know, to have a, you know, a defending attorney. Instead of that, they, you know, the craziest ones defend themselves. And the craziest people always end up doing that because of the same reason. It's the same thing. The craziest head wants to, feels like it understands itself the best. And who else but me to fix myself? I got myself in this problem in the first place. I'll get myself out. Who else can get me out? You know what I mean? Who else can understand me? Well, guess what? The addicts discovered a long time ago that if you get together with other addicts, they'll do a whole heck of a lot better job than a therapist or whatever to unscrew you, you know, to untie your brain. Why? Not because they're smart, and not just because they've been there, but because they're making the change and they're doing the thing that nobody on Guard Your Eyes will tell you to make, probably. Guard Your Eyes will tell you, generally speaking, they'll tell you, be mugdar min ha'arayas, protect yourself. Go through the handbook, you know, look through the Eitzes, how to protect yourself more and more and more from porn, exposure to porn, and how to become more tsanua, you know, how to behave better here and how to protect yourself more there. And but you know what? The problem all along wasn't Arias and Taiva. The problem all along was really something else. The problem, so therefore fixing the Arias and the Taiva stuff is not going to be the answer. The answer is going to be not faking anymore, not lying anymore, and not pretending anymore. That's going to be the answer. Because fantasy is the problem. Escape is the problem. Pretending has been the problem. The use of a fake name, a gimmick that Guard Your Eyes very wisely uses to attract people to Guard Your Eyes so that they can eventually open up and get real help, is the only way that anyone is going to come on to a place like Guard Your Eyes. Who's going to come on using their real whole name? You're going to destroy yourself because it's an open website. It's not a safe place, obviously. Anyone could be there. It's not like you're walking into a Sexaholics Anonymous meeting in the middle of Borough Park, you know, or Lakewood, or Yerushalayim, or, you know, Lahavdil, or, you know, or any other place, you know, or Gateshead, or Manchester, I'm sorry, Munster, or, you know, you're not walking into, you know, if you walk into a meeting like that, obviously it's a safe place, because even though all those communities, everybody knows everybody else's business, and if people find out about you, it's going to travel like wildfire, blah, 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 blah. If meetings have been going on for 20 years in all those places, which they have, and nobody's lost their job, all the rabbanim who are in it, they haven't lost their stellars. All the chanchim who are in it, they haven't lost their jobs. All the lawyers and doctors and successful businessmen and kolel younger life, they still, their children still have gotten good shiduchim. It hasn't gotten out in the community. Why is that? Why is that? Well, it's because they're addicts and we're anonymous. Not we're anonymous from each other, like on Guard Your Eyes, where I have to protect myself from you because I don't know who you are because it's an open website. No, meetings, no Sexaholics Anonymous meetings, for example, are open. We don't have any open meetings where anyone can come in. Oh, no, 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 only sexaholics can come in. If you sit in this room, you're admitting that you're also sick like us, and you admit that you're, you know, a pervert to some degree. You perverted your own sex, yourself and your sexuality by acting out, and that's why you're here to get help. You're not going to walk into a meeting, just like people call in on this call, and they don't speak up. They're afraid. Even when it's not being recorded, they're terrified to speak up. Two people came on this call so far this morning. You know, one person early on the call came on when there was nobody on. You know, and I said, you know, there's nobody else on. It's not being recorded. You're free to ask any question you like so that you can guide today's call or whatever it is. Silence. Why? Why? There's a fear and a shame that's hard to describe to a person who's never been there. I understand it because I've been there, because for the first 15 years of my acting out, I called into anonymous helplines that communities set up with the therapist on the other end, and I couldn't even speak through the phone. I had to talk like this with my hand, and I talked quickly so that they couldn't trace my call because I was afraid they would. And all kinds of paranoid, crazy stuff. I know exactly how the Guard Your Eyes guys who would call into a call like this, and it's only me and them, the only person on the call, you know, because they're the first person, and it's silent, and they won't speak up. And some of them are girls, and they've spoken up before, you know, and it's not because, you know, a lot of them are older men, and they think that they're well-known in the community, and some of them may be, and they're terrified to talk lest I recognize them. You know, or less, they don't know who I am. I might be their neighbor, you know, and I might be. You know, one of my neighbors actually is, you know, has been on this call probably. He told me, I think. But the point of this is that I'm trying to say is that it's the faking and the honesty and the hiding and the fantasy. They all go together. They're all part of the same problem. That's not a gimmick. That's the real thing. That's touching the bas ayin. That's something we don't want to do. Why don't you want to do it? Why didn't that person want to actually say hello? Why? For the same reason that I didn't want to for 15 years until I was ready. You know, until I was ready to start recovering. It took me another 5 years to get into it, but to really get real help. But 15 years, you know? Why? Because the problem is isolation. The problem is arrogance that I'm the only one who really understands me, and I'm the only one who can really help me, and that I'm not really powerless. I'm not really sick. I'm just a bad guy trying to get good like everybody else. And who else is going to help a person? It may not need Lee Mealy. You know, so therefore I can't open up. What good is that going to do? It's just going to, you know, and then come the lies, you know, and, you know, it's just my kids will never get shidduchim, and I'm going to lose my job and this and that and the other thing, you know. So all those things eventually take over, and the person just cannot open up, cannot give in. So just can't do it. Just can't bring themselves to do what they need to do, to get the help that they need to get. And it then basically the arrogance just builds and builds along with the isolation. People who are the most isolated have to be the most arrogant. Because why do you have so much to hide? You understand? Arrogance and like hiding go together. Because why do I have to hide so much? You know, if I can find someone who really is safe, why can't I open up to them? I have to say, there are so many guys I talk to through Guard Your Eyes who call and email me, etc., who are going to therapy for depression or for ADD or for who knows what, and they've never talked to their therapist about their masturbation problem. You know, they just haven't talked to their therapist about their masturbation problem. And I ask them why not, and they say all kinds of reasons. You know, it's just arrogance. We know that it's fear. We feel sympathy for the person. because we understand that it's fear, it's fear, it's fear. But functionally speaking, in terms of actual practically speaking, that's arrogance. That's saying, I can, you know, you're a therapist, you're a mental health professional, I'm hiring you to help me with my distractibility. Well, you know, I'm distracted like crazy by the fact that my, you know, that there's this girl in the conference who's sitting three rows ahead of me, who's incredibly gorgeous. And, you know, boy, I'm distracted by the fact that I'd like to masturbate. I'm distracted by the porn images that I saw last night. I'm distracted by et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm working with you on my ADD and my distractibility without telling.
Hi, it's Dove again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that break in the call. I apologize. Something happened with my.
I think I'm not sure what it was, but anyhow, I'm hoping that the connection remains this time, and I can continue this thought and finish this this call. I'm good. In a straightforward fashion. The problem that the person is experiencing really is that they're ashamed and afraid. You know, the problem is that the person's really just ashamed and afraid, terrified. I know the terror. I've been there. For 15 years, I was in that terror, at least 15 years, alone. There's no loneliness like addiction, or even not addiction, hiding this habit. Even if you're not an addict, the loneliness of hiding a habit of lusting and masturbating, sex with yourself, which masturbating is having sex with yourself, masturbating and hiding and faking, and especially if you're a frum Jew, you're the biggest faker and hider of them all. Because you have so much to hide. It's so embarrassing. And yet you are. And you come to shul and you shuckle like just like the next guy, or maybe more, or maybe less, which shows that you have more kavana because you're more serene. And it's all an act. It all becomes an act. Not that all your mitzvahs, chas v'shalom, are an act and don't count for anything. I'm not saying that, you know, even though, you know, the Sfarim are full of that idea that, you know, there's, that, you know, they're of limited value if you don't do tshuva before, etc. But, you know, but I'm not going into that whole thing because I don't want to take people out of, you know, enjoyment in their mitzvahs. Why would I want to discourage people from doing mitzvahs? You know, but there's certainly something lacking, you know, if it's not really toko kibaro. If just because I can be sincere, quote unquote, while I'm in shul, and then screw around when I'm out of shul, but I'm sincere while I'm there, what does that mean? That means I'm living a double life. That means that I'm so arrogant because I'm afraid. I'm afraid to get help. So the person who's in that kind of situation, instead of staying afraid, people in recovery invite them to open up, to find the help. You know, if you're on guard your eyes, you know, so then, yes, you come on using the gimmick of the fake name and all this stuff, and it works really nicely, and it's very helpful. And you might do the 90-day chart, and you might, get yourself a little cleaned out from the porn so that your brain isn't so affected by it. Very nice. Now what do you do? How do you achieve real change? How do you achieve real change? By getting more Mugder Min Ha'arayas? It's going to backfire. As I tried to explain in a call a few months ago about why so many frum people are sex addicts, the frum world, frum people, are by far, not just by far, overwhelmingly the fastest and largest group, growing group, of Sexaholics Anonymous members worldwide. You can go into many countries where Jews comprise a small population of a city, and you'll find half the members are from Jews. And it's not the pshat. And it's not the pshat that, well, the goyim, well, why would there be goyim there at all? What do the goyim care at all about recovery? Why should they recover? They want to do these things. They're not averis for them, so why would they care? No, you're going to find tons of goyim, even non-religious goyim, tons of them in SA meetings worldwide, tons. And in my exposure so far in 20 years of attending these meetings in a bunch of countries around the world so far is actually that among the frum Jews who are going, the percentage of really sick behaviors and lots of prostitution and sex with other people and all this stuff is actually higher than among the goyim. There are more Gentile members that I've met whose only problem is pornography and masturbation who are attending SA meetings because they're so brokenhearted about being so childish and out of control even though they're adults and acting out and masturbating and ruining their marriages and divorces, getting divorced from their wives just because of pornography and masturbation. There's so many Gentiles who are divorced over pornography and masturbation. And all these from Yidden running around say things like, oh, well, why would a guy care? Ugh, they do it themselves and they enjoy it and here and there. No, actually, the from Jews who are in SA are just a little bit sicker than the Gentiles who are in SA, percentage-wise, I'd say. So far, that's what it seems to me. There are more from Jews who have used prostitutes and stuff than Gentiles who have used prostitutes in my exposure so far, percentage-wise. So it's so many things are the opposite of what we're thinking. And I spoke about why that might be in a call a few months ago. But like I was trying to explain there, being hypervigilant in Sinias doesn't solve the problem. It actually makes the problem worse. Because when a person does that, they become hyper-focused on sexuality and they sexualize situations that are otherwise not sexual. In other words, to a regular person, who Rav Dessler actually talks about this in Mitzvah Miliyahu in Chelek Aleph, a certain prat of this fact. When someone who's like not so from and stuff sees somebody who's not so dressed, whatever, so it doesn't really do anything to them. Because whatever, they see it all the time, so what? A person who's from and this and that, they see it, it drives them crazy. Not because they're so moral and so good, which they might be, but that's not the problem. The problem is that they're like, oh no, a woman, oi, oi, a woman, oi, she has breasts, give out, what am I going to do? So, there's this Chicken Little kind of thing going on, where it's like, oh my God, the sky is falling. There's another, the woman in the store, we're alone, Chazal Choshed, that we're going to have Bia, and it's like you're sexualizing the situation where it's like, shut up. Of course, keep the halacha, but don't sexualize it, The Chazal established patterns of behavior that are good for us. Follow Chazal's advice. Don't think about, well, what it means that there were, arayas might happen, we have sex with each other. It's crazy. You're sexualizing a situation, but that's what the Talmud is. And if you look in the Sfarim, that's what it explains. No. You're sexualizing a situation. Because I'll establish certain patterns of behavior that are healthy and good for us. Tanias, yichud, etc., nida, of course, etc., etc. These are patterns of behavior that are good for us. Thinking deeply into why and what and how and this and that, if you're a healthy person, is fine, because it's going to help you. If you're a non-healthy person, you're going to sexualize it all. It's all going to become sexualized, and it's going to make you worse and worse and worse. You know, typically, if you have to say an isha instead of a woman, you know, if you have to distance yourself from it because you think that's more tznias, lashon nekiyah, and this and that, there's something probably wrong with your whole approach. Because if you have to be so, I'm not saying that if you're a gadol b'torah and you have to do this way, that's a whole different story. You're talking about a person who's an esug acher legamri, a person who's head and shoulders above the average person. You know, when Reb Tzvi Meyer Shlita walks outside on the street, sometimes he comes back and he says, you know, I feel like I have to go to the mikveh again. He didn't ejaculate on the street in his pants. Come on, that's ridiculous. No, it's that there's an etznius out there, and he's affected by it in his way, not because he's fantasizing about it. That's not what he's saying. I have to go to the mikveh again because he didn't do anything wrong. It's just that he's on such a madrega of purity that he's affected. You know, a tzaddik is Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, it says, Chazal say that such and such a tzaddik, different tzaddikim through the doors, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, etc., they could have been Mashiach, but the Bnei Yisrael, you know, us, we weren't Zocha Lekach. You know, we weren't ready for that. We weren't clean enough, you know, or something. And therefore, he couldn't be what he could have been otherwise. The tzaddik grows because of the tzibur. The tzibur grows because of the tzaddik. It's a two-way interplay. Not a one-way street where the tzaddik just gives. He's affected by the tzibur. And this is what these people mean. That's not the situation for you and me. That's not, but you know what? You know how many guys I've met that have been thinking along those lines? Becoming a Kaddish Tahar and thinking like, you learn Rav Aaron Rutz's farm, you go into that kind of stuff, and it's like, it just sucks you into this whole thing where you eventually fantasize day and night about what a Kaddish you are, you know, and you're just like a walking around neshama. You're a neshama walking around. And, you know, the next time you find yourself in the bathroom masturbating yourself, you wonder, like, what happened to the tzaddik? Oh, well, this is the Sahara. It's the fights, the tremendous epic battles that are happening, and I'm part of it, and it's the you know, bringing the geula by fighting, and this, it all becomes fantasy-driven, crazy-driven, extremism. There's a beautiful talk I heard from somebody where the speaker said that vulnerability is a basic human trait. It's a basic quality of being a member of humanity. There's this thing called being vulnerable, vulnerability. Okay? It's all over Yiddishkeit. All over Yiddishkeit, vulnerability. It's through and through in Yiddishkeit, in Avodas Hashem. We're vulnerable. Vulnerable means that I don't really control all the outcomes. I don't control the outcomes. What I control is my own reactions to things. I have power over my own reactions to things. I don't have power over the outcomes. But what? How do I react? Yeah, I have power over that. You know, my attitudes towards things. I have power over that. I might not have complete power over it, but I have some power over it. Definitely have a lot of power over it, not complete power. But anyhow, I can get help, you know, for my bad attitudes, for my dysfunctional ways of facing and seeing things. My, you know, I can get help for that, and I can do better, you know. But anyhow, a person who's trying to, like, change their attitude, he does the 90-day thing, and he wants to, and that's just a gimmick. Everyone knows it's just a gimmick. Even if it changes brain chemistry and this and that, it doesn't solve the problem. And this person wants to solve the problem finally by taking a stake and driving it into the heart of the Yetzer Hara by being completely Mugder Min HaArayos. What the person's trying to really do is become invulnerable. You can't do that if you're a human being. Human beings are by nature vulnerable, not weak. We're not sinners. Like, I'm not saying like that. I'm saying that this isn't a Christian thing. This is Yiddishkeit. This is consistent with Yiddishkeit. I'm saying that we are vulnerable. We are who we are. Ba'aron mahu kisalinu alav. You know, what are we already? Don't get so full of yourself that you think you have to know all the answers to everything. Rabbi Nachman says that the tachlis of knowledge is to know, to come to learn that you don't know. Vulnerability. The highest knowledge is to know that you don't know. Ayin. You don't know. That's the greatest, is the greatest honesty, is to know that I'm dishonest. To know that I don't know. That's vulnerability. If you can't, well, let me put it in a positive way. If you want to build up your vulnerability, find safe people with whom you can be honest with. Like the Rebbe Reb Melech writes in Os Yud Gimel of the Tzetel Katan, Al techachin imenu shum dover mitnei habusha. Find safe people who you can be open with about everything. If you're going to therapy and you haven't been telling your therapist, whether it's a him or a her, a Jew or a goy, whatever it is, you haven't been telling it, you've been going to therapist for one problem, but you haven't mentioned this stuff, mention this stuff to your therapist. You know? If you have close friends who you trust and who you believe are safe, find one who you can open up to about this problem. And if you're a 15-year-old kid, finding another 15-year-old kid is all fine and good. Except, how's he going to help you? Or how's she going to help you? How is that going to work? What good is that going to be if they themselves are still struggling in that same thing? You know, and you know, that's why therapists aren't going to help you either necessarily, because sometimes the therapist is a sexaholic themselves or an alcoholic themselves, and they're not sober and they're still acting out. You don't know. Therapists like that's going to be able, like, guard your eyes. It's going to give you tons of information, but it won't save you. Lots of information, but it won't save you. Find people who are clean, if you can. That's one of the beauties of Sexaholics Anonymous and the other 12-step groups, where it's all filled with people who are working on self-honesty. How do you get self-honesty? By being honest with other people. You know? How do you find out what loving Hashem really means? It's by loving your parents, then your wife, then your children. That's why Kabedas Avicha Vesimecha, which is love your parents, not just honor, but love. If you look in the Zohar Kodesh, that's what it says. All mitzvot aseh are kibud. All mitzvot lo aseh are yira. Kibud is ahava. Yira is mora, you know, is yira. That's what kibud is, mitzvot ahava. That's mitzvot aseh. Why do you do a mitzvot aseh? Because of yira? You do a mitzvot aseh because of ahava. Mitzvot lo aseh you do because of yira. That's what it is. Don't do this, v'yareisa me'alekecha. It doesn't say, wear tzitzis, v'yareisa me'alekecha. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say, say shema and v'yareisa me'alekecha. There's no mitzvot aseh and then v'yareisa me'alekecha, you know, except for bias mikdash, except for coming to the mikdash. But, all right, but that's obviously qualitatively different than anything we do today. Well, maybe visiting a tzaddik, you know what I'm saying? You learn Yiras Shamayim. Except there's no mitzvah aseh in the Torah that we do that in and itself is, the motivation is because of Yira. You can learn Yira from it. But because of Yira, that's why you don't do Averis. Because of Yira, you don't do Averis. Because of Ahava, you do mitzvahs. So how is a person gonna learn openness? How's a person gonna learn honesty to themselves and to Hashem? How? By being honest with people. That's why Hashem says, you want me? Take people. if you open yourself up to people, then you'll eventually, after a few years, and it will take years probably, and the changes will start almost immediately, except the big changes that you're looking for will take time. If you've been masturbating yourself, looking at pornography, and living in fantasy and trying to fix yourself, because who else is going to fix me but me, you know? If you've been playing into that arrogant kind of game of self-deception and shame and invulnerability, well, I can't make myself vulnerable to anyone else and really tell them the truth about me. People are dangerous. People are evil. People get you, you know? If that's the way you've been functioning, then I promise you, that's the way you think about Hashem, that he's dangerous and he gets you. And the Maggid writes in the Toldos, he writes that the Maggid used to say that your Shemayim does not mean being afraid of God. If you're afraid of God, that means he's your enemy. You don't have your Shemayim. That's something else. That's egotism. That's me coming first, and now he's a threat to me. That's not Yiras Shemayim. Being afraid of God means that he's the enemy. He's your problem. How many people here are masturbating and trying to stop, and Hashem is really their problem? Raise your hand. Oh, I see a lot of hands. You know, that's the situation, unfortunately. Most of the people who want to stop because Hashem says that they have to stop. They don't really want to stop, and we all know that. Hashem says I have to stop. He's my problem. That's really what's going on. The Torah is my I would do this. I would love it. If I would be a guy, then it would be fine. That means the Torah is your problem. That means that Hashem outside you, my wife will catch me, I can't lose my wife. That means that your wife is your problem. You're not trying to recover for yourself. The AA book says that the program really is motivated by what they call enlightened self-interest. It may not me, li, doesn't say to Hashem, li, if I'm not for myself, then me, li, who will be for me? We can tell ourselves that, oh, we do it for Hashem, for Hashem, for Hashem, but it doesn't work that way. And self-honesty is learned from slowly and safely and completely opening up to others. To other safe human beings. That's why if a person isolates from people, they isolate from Hashem. And if a person says that only I can save myself, then they just push themselves further and further into this fantasy world that they've been living in all along. You know? So if you want to make real change, don't become more mugder min ha'arayas. That wasn't your problem to begin with. Your problem from the very start was you found this sweet stuff and you were ashamed when you used it. Even if you didn't know it was an avera, you weren't masturbating on your front porch, were you? If somebody would have walked in, you would have denied it. If someone would have asked you, if your parent would have asked you, or you know, or even a friend, hey, do you masturbate? You probably would have said, oh, no, me? No. Even before you knew that it was an avera, I didn't know it was an avera. That's ridiculous. You were hiding it, of course. And other behaviors involved also. You were hiding and hiding. If you found someone to do it with, that's one thing. They wanted it as much as you did. So, you know, but, you know, you were hiding it even before you knew. So not knowing that it was wrong, I didn't find out that it was an avera, it's really ridiculous talk. This stuff started back in the time when we were hiding, faking, lying, isolating. And the proof of that is, how isolated do you and I feel when we do this stuff? Think back. You know, we can all remember. The isolation is like deafening. It's unbelievable. The isolation is devastating is the word. Devastating isolation. And why is that? Well, I can't tell because if they find out, it's going to... No, it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than that. It's because it's part of a whole construct that I've constructed about defining myself and all that. You know, and, oh, I don't want to be known as this, and I'm not that kind of person, and yeah, I am. The first thing is going to have to be self-honesty, and that's going to be achieved by finding self people who you and I and we all can open up to and tell the truth to. You know? Otherwise, this whole thing's not going to get off the ground. You're going to have your 90 days, you're going to have your tafsik, you're going to have your shmafsik, you're going to have this, you're going to have that. But you're not going to have anything in the end left from it all. It's not going to leave you with any goodies. That's a pity. Because nothing will have really changed. Because the thing that needs to change is not mugir min ha'arayas and fighting tivus better and living for Hashem better and all this other stuff. No, no, no. The thing that has to change is being an isolated person. Armor around you, walls built up around you to protect you from all those people out there who are dangerous. And the tshuva in this is to protect you from Hashem, who is dangerous too. You do tshuva because you have to protect yourself from Hashem, don't you? Because you don't want to have kares, you don't want your children to die, God forbid. You don't want to become poor, you know, maybe lidei anius. You don't want to have this, you don't want to have that. You don't want to come up and face a mason without body parts, this and that. You have all these problems. Oy, you're protecting yourself from Hashem. That's not the answer. The answer isn't protect yourself from God. The answer is get free. Learn how to get free so that you can be a normal, healthy, from Yid, which is what you want to be. When we batter this problem with Yiddishkeit, these are the kind of mistakes that we make. You know? If a husband and wife, if a husband has these secrets from his wife, all the time together and shmaim together and communication and everything that you do, it's all good. It's all helpful. It's all very nice. It's not going to solve the problem. It's not going to make the perfect marriage. The perfect marriage can't have any secrets. The perfect marriage, if that's what you want, the perfect marriage, it's not going to have, it can't have secrets. Can't have secrets. Well, she'll find out after 120 when she watches the video and we're up sharing a table. I may have, you know, not at Mayabesh forever, you know, in Olam Haba. Then she'll find out. But why should she find out here? It'll just stair the marriage. Well, you know, if you have big secrets like that, that if you told her you would stair the marriage, I'm not suggesting that you tell her right now. I'm suggesting that you get help from a therapist who has experience in family therapy and relationships and talk to him or her about what to do, because you want to get close. You don't want to have secrets from your wife or from your husband. You don't want to have secrets. Speak to a therapist and get good guidance. Somebody who really knows couples, a rav, you know, somebody who really knows couples well, you know. Don't go and guard your eyes and get advice from somebody who might be a 15-year-old kid who just masturbated last night and who writes beautifully about marriage and relationships, and it's amazing. Don't do that. That's not going to help you. The final thing I just want to leave with is a shtickel I saw last night in the Toldos on Parshas Chukas. It's like three quarters of the way through in the Toldos Yaakov Yosef. He says, I think it's very beautiful. He says that. La'olam yasa adam b'torah mitzvah shelo lishma, shemitok shelo lishma ba lishma. Why does he say la'olam? So a lot of people say that, you know, obviously, you know, la'olam, it says la'olam because you would think that you should never do it. And the Gemara says, no, you should never say that you should never do it. You know, you should never say you should never learn lishma and do mitzvahs lishma. Because, you know, there are Gemaras that say if you learn the Shema, it really stinks. But okay, you know, it's true that, you know, but that's the Nefesh HaChaim talks about that in, I think, Shardalat or somewhere. And he talks about where it's, you know, that's two different kinds of Lishma or this or that. Okay, fine. But you know, the Gemara has to say, La'olam, no, La'olam. In other words, really, a person should still learn, even if it's Shalol Lishma, because Mitel Shalol Lishma, Ba Lishma. But he, the Toldos, explains it very differently. And by the way, exactly the same way, almost exactly the same way, explains Rav Dessler. Not exactly a chassid, but okay. A lot of it's Ladder of Deathless material is almost identical with Svatemeth and other Siddhisha stuff that I've seen. But the Toldos explains that La'olam means always. You should endeavor to learn Shelo Lashma. Shemitok Shelo Lashma Bo Lashma. Because if you don't learn Shelo Lashma, if you discourage yourself completely from anything but the Lashma, then what's going to happen is you're not going to succeed. You're going to fail. In the end, you're going to fail because there's no humility there. Because the arrogance is going to come in and grab chap the mitzvah, so to speak. Because our own arrogance is going to come in and say, you see what I did? You know? The mitzvah will kill itself. So, therefore, it's better to do it shelo lishma, realizing that my intentions are not pure, and admitting that, and saying, well, but that's because I'm a human being, and that's what I do. And through that path, a person will come to lishma, which is basically doing the mitzvahs properly, is, you know, how he's teaching it. And then eventually, after years, not months, not by this Elul's month, he means years, after years of doing it this way, a person will come to doing it lishma. So, and what's lishma? What's lishma? The problem with starting out with lishma is that, like the Maseilas Yesharim says, v'hachasidus ha'amiti rachok hi mitzir sechleinu. The true chasidus that we're aiming for is far from anything we can really imagine. That's the problem. The arrogance in us will infect what we do if we pretend that we're doing things lishma. And the truth really is that the lishma is something we can't even understand. If you're not on that madrega, mimonapshach, you can't understand it. That's what Maseilas Yesharim writes. Maseilas Yesharim, it's funny. Maseilas Yesharim begins with v'ver klal chovos ha'adam ba'olam is what does he say? That yesod ha'chidus v'shorash ha'avodah ha'tmimah she'is bara v'yis'ameis etzal adam ma'hi chovoso be'olamo. And what he should set his magama of all his kochos that he does for the rest of his life. In other words, to have a direction that you exact clear, she is barer vis ames, clear, that it should be barer and emes, clear and truthful, you know, to you, exactly what direction you're going. And then he says later, v'hakasidus ha'amiti rachoki mesir sechleinu, you can't possibly really, when you're not in it, you can't understand what it really is. So how are you supposed to direct yourself to a goal that you can't even imagine, that you can't understand? You don't know what you're going towards, so how do you have a goal? How do you make a goal? It's a stira, isn't it? So the pshat is because that's how it works. We have to have a goal to a thing that we don't understand, admitting that we don't understand it. That's our goal, to a place that I can't understand. How do you do that if you're not humble? If a person's arrogant, if a person thinks that they know exactly where they're going, how can they possibly get there? How can it possibly be a good place? Because if you and I can understand it now really, know exactly what it is now, then how good a place can it possibly be? If what's natural to me is to bring myself to all these rotten places, look at your track record. So it must be that humility is our byword. Humility is our byword. Read the 12 and 12, Alcoholics Anonymous, 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, the chapter on Step 7, you know? And, you know, just read the whole book. It's fabulous. But the chapter on Step 7, it's so full of humility. Humility is dripping off the page. Humility is just dripping off the page. That's all there is, you know? You become an aspaklaria hameira. God flows through you. And that's what I talked about. That's what I tried to talk about a few weeks ago by Kena Asa Aaron. You know, Hashem Aaron did exactly what Hashem commanded him. What's the chiddush? Because Lo Shina, he was like, he took up. Sorry about the background noise. He took a page out of Moshe Rabbeinu's book, and he became an Asbaklari. He was an Asbaklari HaMe'ira, not for Torah, for mitzvahs. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Asbaklari HaMe'ira for Torah. Aaron was the Asbaklari HaMe'ira for mitzvahs, because he did exactly like Hashem says, Velo Shina. He didn't insert any Aaron-ness into it. There was no individuality, no Aaron stempel on there. He just did exactly as God commanded, something that none of us can do. You can't do it, I promise. I can't do it, I know it. You can't do it. It's a worthy goal to set our sights on, but we can't even imagine what it could possibly be like. Why would we want to do mitzvahs like that? It's hard to really wrap our brains around. Even Hashem didn't give me my individual kochos for a purpose, you know? Anyway, but that's what the direction that we're going in the program is, at least. And I think it's beautifully stated by that piece in the Toldos, where he says that if a person doesn't use shelo lishma, if a person refuses to learn and do things shelo lishma because that's beneath them, what they're really saying is, oh, I understand what I'm supposed to do. I'm too low for that, and that arrogance itself is going to kill their mitzvahs. It's a little bit like the concept of a Sarah La'azazel, a little bit, how the Sarah La'azazel helps a person accomplish and succeed in the end. A little bit like that concept. I just want to say thanks, and I would very much appreciate it if people would email me things that they want me to talk about, because I really think that I'm not covering topics that the Olam needs to hear. I have no way to know what the Olam needs to hear. I don't have the pulse of the nation. You know, it's people like you who can call in and educate me as to what you want to hear and, you know, what you want to have discussed. So I'd appreciate that. My email is wequithiding2, wequithiding, wequithiding, and then the number 2, wequith, wequithiding2, the number 2, at gmail.com. And if you can, let me know, or give me any feedback that you like. I'd appreciate that. Thanks a lot. If you have criticism, I would appreciate that even more, actually, because if I'm doing things that are detracting from people on this call, maybe repeating myself too much, maybe talking about things in an arrogant way, I don't know. If I'm doing things wrong, I really would like to know so that I can try to get the help I need to stop it and do things in a better way. So you're not doing me any favors by sparing me the lesson. So hatzlacha with everything that you're doing today, and have a good day. Bye-bye.